Good morning and welcome to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from neighborhood news source Mission Local. I'm Laura Wenis, and today I wanted to talk a bit about housing in the neighborhood, specifically with someone who has worked on getting people access to housing in a variety of different ways. With me today is Chirag Bakta, a housing activist, a member of the Plaza 16 Coalition, former organizer with the SRO Collaborative, and now with Mission Housing. He's been in a lot of different places. Chirag, thank you for being here.
No problem. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And of course, with so many different roles under your belt, it's safe to say you don't necessarily represent any of your employer's opinions, just your own. We're here to talk about you and housing activism and what you've been doing.
Yes, Chirag Bakta, the housing activist.
Good. So one of the reasons I thought it would be interesting to have that conversation is because I do quote you a lot in reporting, and I do write about housing issues a lot. And I think I wanted people to get a sense of sort of what you're about. Can you give us a sense of your background and how you got into housing?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the coverage. It's always nice to see your own name in the media.
Sometimes people don't like it so much, but
at least for my own personal ego. But I'm born and raised in San Francisco. My parents immigrated from India. My mom was a maid at the Hilton in Union Square, actually. My dad was a dishwasher at Mills Drive-In. Amongst other jobs that they had. I grew up in the Tenderloin, went to public schools, Bessie Carmichael, Francisco, middle school, Galileo High School. So a lot of my roots are in the city. I'm a city kid. Till I die, I'll call it Frisco, no matter what the Herb Cain enthusiasts like to, no matter how much they try to correct me, Frisco.
I think a lot of people don't actually know that it came from Herb Cain, who said that you shouldn't call it Frisco. They just heard that from somewhere, and you shouldn't call it Frisco. The natives don't call it Frisco, and then a lot of natives are like, actually, we totally do.
Yeah, it's that part always interested me because throughout high school, middle school, all we always called it Frisco, right? There was never a debate about it until I got older, and apparently a lot of the young folks were saying, oh, you shouldn't call it Frisco, right? Because that's not what the local folks say. And the local folks were all confused.
And you're like, I am a local folk.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I've had the word Frisco on a t-shirt when I was in high school, right?
So you've got your native cred. How did you get into housing?
So on the housing piece, when I was in university, I was an organizer working on higher education issues, and I decided organizing was the career path I wanted to take. I had left the city for a little bit to work on higher education, came back, and housing was the number one issue in the city. And for someone like myself, coming back to a city that's been gentrified, where there's a housing crisis, there's massive displacement. If there was a way for me to help and organize and find a way to kind of either save the parts of the city that are left or try to like push back against gentrification, against the housing crisis, then I wanted to go ahead and do so. So I applied to work at the Mission SRO Collaborative, and luckily they hired me. And ever since then, I've been enthralled in the housing world, specifically in the Mission, but also citywide.
So what has changed over the years that you've been working on housing? However many that's been?
It's been about 3 years up until this point. I mean, granted, it's like things change, but things also stay the same, right? Like eviction rates, displacement rates, rents still going up. But really, what I've seen is over the past few years, a lot of neighborhood fights are starting to connect with each other, and that the identity of a Frisco resistance towards gentrification is beginning to, I think, enter people's minds. And then people are starting to now, more than I think in the past, I think it did happen in the past, but I think more now people are willing to go hard for the entire city and not just their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And coalitions and organizations and activists are trying to save the entire city, and are willing to go out and fight hard for Richmond District folks, for people that are facing evictions in Western Addition or Chinatown or Bayview or the Mission or everywhere. To me, I think that's definitely been needed. you know, because it's granted we do have massive neighborhood fights that we need to that we need to be focused on, but we also need to ensure that we are in solidarity with people facing the brunt of this crisis all over the city, right? Gentrification is not just hitting one neighborhood. It's hitting multiple neighborhoods at the same time in similar and different ways. And we need to be there for each other.
So let's talk about how gentrification actually affects people who are already in housing. Because I think, you know, one of the things that we hear most often, we sort of get stuck in the middle between people who see gentrification, who see specifically new development as a threat, and people who see specifically new development as the thing that will save us from this problem. And a lot of people, I think, get impatient with the idea that there's any opposition to new housing because supply and demand, new housing will ease pressures, gentrification pressures. So can you walk those people through why you often appear to oppose new production of housing?
Yeah, so it's, you know, the dominant economic theories out there are supply and demand, and that's going to solve everything, right? That's clearly not the case in San Francisco. We've built thousands of units of housing, and we've built beyond what we said we were going to build for market rate units. Granted, has that kept up with the amount of people that want to come live here? No.
Right. I think that's sort of the central complaint of everybody.
However, we can't build our way out of this crisis, right? There's, you know, there are reports that say we need to build 400,000 additional units in San Francisco in order to then just maintain the pace of the price of housing going up with the rest of the country, right? That's not a thing that's possible. And on top of that, I honestly think this is not a San Francisco issue. This is a regional issue. And there's a lot of cities in the South Bay who have not built housing, but it's where a lot of the jobs are. And it's where a lot of people who live here go to, right? The Google buses, the Oracle buses, the Yahoo buses, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to the South Bay, right? But they're coming to live here. And the thing is, San Francisco itself cannot solve this. But on top of that, in neighborhoods where we've seen massive, in the Mission specifically, market rate developments have not helped long-term residents, low-income residents, and many people of color communities, right?
So we're talking about an issue of displacement as a result of housing, not housing somehow making the problem worse inherently.
Market rate housing does make it worse in terms of having more different populations come in that can afford different levels of housing. So if you build these housing units with these new amenities, and then you have more people who want to come live in this neighborhood, then neighborhood's going to change, right? Businesses are going to change. You know, you're going to have the populations change. Therefore, there's not enough, you know, there's really, if there's more demand for people to come into a neighborhood, there's more incentive for landlords to then evict people or displace people, right? Ellis Act evictions, owner move-in evictions, all of these things have been on the rise because people want to move into these trendy neighborhoods, right? And, you know, and there might be a little bit of, you know, market rate housing that's there that first attracts people there, but then afterwards there's a huge swath of folks who want to come in. And the thing is, for someone like me, it's like, why isn't the city prioritizing housing for people that are struggling?
Right. You made a distinction earlier, but we didn't really dig into it, between what we're building at the market rate and what we're building below market rate. So price constrained housing. And my understanding is that San Francisco has reached its regional goals in building market rate housing, but is lagging behind on the
affordable piece, right? And really, it's, you know, the greatest, it's people who have economic means also have the privilege of economic mobility, right? A lot of people who don't have these economic means can't just get up and move when it gets too expensive, right? Someone can afford a nice place in San Francisco. They can also afford a really nice place anywhere in the country, right? My parents came here as immigrants, right? A lot of my friends who are here are children of immigrants. There's nowhere else for them to go. The jobs are here. Their communities are here. The organizations that help keep the defense of these communities are here. There are a lot of nonprofits we can't have people commuting from Tracy, from Fairfield, from Antioch, which is happening today because it's more affordable to live there because San Francisco is just too expensive, right? We can't be that city. We need to be better, and we need to find ways of making it better. Does that mean we need to build more affordable housing? Yes. But that also means we need to be fighting for rent control. We need to be fighting for greater tenant protections. And we need to also speak about the realities of gentrification and the pain and suffering it causes. Beyond that, it's caused, at least for me and my generation of folks that were born and raised in Frisco and grew up here, San Francisco isn't a place that a lot of my friends and people my age see a future in. And a lot of folks I went to high school with are gone. They're not in the city anymore, and they don't want to be in the city anymore. San Francisco has turned into a place that has turned its back on a lot of its native sons and daughters and gender non-binary folks. And that's like, you know, it's very difficult to calmly walk around gentrified San Francisco, for myself at least, because it's
you arguably know, you don't always succeed in walking around calmly.
Yes, this is true. But you know, even like the morning walks to work or going from meeting to meeting, right? Like, you know, we see the disparities. We see a Google bus, and then we see, you know, a homeless encampment, right? And then, you know, what we think are the priorities for the city are not based in social justice and equity and what we want San Francisco to be based in.
So let's talk about pain and suffering on the street for a second and places where people might walk around, because one of those places, of course, is the 16th and Mission BART Plaza. And I think that there is a pretty strong visceral reaction to the idea of cleaning up the plaza, which is one of the sort of discussions that you've been pretty involved in, especially when it comes to the 1979 Mission project.
It's what the developer branded, clean up the plaza. Right.
Right. And I think to a lot of people, that is honestly an attractive option. People don't, you know, in many ways want to witness this kind of suffering. People don't want things to be dirty. But then there's, of course, also the argument that as soon as you make things nicer and more upscale, you ostracize people based on class. Is there a way to make people feel safe in this big public space without ostracizing people?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
If people don't like seeing homeless people on the street, they should advocate for homeless housing. If people don't like seeing what's happening at 16th and Mission, then they should be advocating for more social services for people. Not this very, you know, rapacious and, you know, often like devaluing of people's humanity by saying, you know, we should clean it up. It's too dirty. There's too much drugs and crime and blight in this area, and we just need to sweep it away. Right. That to me is very dangerous language. And really, I honestly think it does dehumanize the suffering that's there, because there are solutions. There are solutions to homelessness. There are solutions to crime and blight. And the solution is not market rate housing. And the solution isn't to, you know, to say we need to clean this area up because it's dirty. Right. But it's, you know, it's. Who are they talking about, right? You can clean it up. Are you going to replace them with people, other people?
Well, the question also is, where do you put it? I mean, like, if you're going to sweep something away, we've seen this over and over again in our homelessness coverage and just, you know, walking around on the street. You know, somebody has moved away from their spot one day and they go somewhere else and they reappear the next day because there is nowhere for them to go.
Yeah, you see mobile tenant or homeless encampments, right? And it's not sustainable for the city, first of all, but then it's not, these aren't solutions, right? And I really believe San Francisco is better than sweeping the problems away.
Is affordable housing on that block going to make a difference in terms of what people see on the street? Particularly thinking about crime, for example, because that's a huge concern at 16th and Mission.
Yeah. I mean, I think a great example of this is Valencia Gardens. Valencia Gardens is an affordable housing development on Valencia Street between 14th and 15th. And, you know, not that long ago, there were bullet holes in the windows of Valencia Gardens, right? The property was redeveloped and it's still an affordable housing development, but there's much less crime there, right? There are services on the ground floor, right? There's like a little daycare center there. There are a couple organizations that go, you know, and they help youth learn how to code, right? Like there are solutions to this, right? Like we can have family friendly spaces and neighborhood serving spaces in these affordable housing developments where people can go to get help.
But can you do it without gentrifying the street?
Valencia Gardens is 100% affordable housing development. Everyone there gets subsidized units and they're not market rate. They're affordable. And so, you know, as far as we know, Valencia Gardens is not a gentrifying factor because it's housing people who would otherwise be displaced by gentrification.
Sure, but it also makes the street look a lot nicer.
It does, but there's no reason why affordable housing developments can't look just as nice as market rate developments, right? It's, you know, it's they can look exactly the same. It just depends on how much people are paying to live there.
Let's talk about another form of affordable housing that has been, I think, affected pretty hard by gentrification, which is SROs. Mm-hmm. What happens to an SRO in a gentrified neighborhood? I mean, there's plenty around 16th and Mission and 16th and Valencia for that matter.
Yeah, there are a lot of SROs on 16th Street and around that area. And what we're seeing and what we saw when my work was focused around it was there was definitely an increase in harassment of landlords towards tenants in order to get them out of their units. So one thing that we saw is landlords flipping individual units. So as soon as they can get somebody out, they would. So SRO basically is like a 10 by 10 room. They're shared bathroom, shared bath. Landlord would come in and then fix up the unit, make it look all nice. So put like granite countertop, you know, and they'll make it look really modern. And then they'll sell that unit for about $1,100 a month, right? The most I've seen is $1,100, right? Where the previous tenant, who was, you know, low income, usually there are a lot of fixed income folks living in SROs, were paying maybe, you know, $500, $600, $700 of their income for the room. And now
because
the landlord,
they're rent controlled, right?
Yeah, and landlords now have economic incentive for getting rid of low income populations because lo and behold, people are now willing to live in SROs. SRO housing stock was never meant to either be a unit that went for over $1,000, first of all. But second of all, it was never meant for like new populations of people with money to come in because there's no other housing, right? SRO housing stock historically, you know, back when it was a port town, it was used for, you know, people that are like seasonal workers. But then, you know, past few decades, it's been used as housing of last resort for people.
Including families.
Yeah, and definitely families before they would maybe be homeless, or for some people, if they have the opportunity to and the privilege to maybe move away and maybe find the same amount of rent in Richmond or, you know, Hayward or something.
So they get more expensive and sometimes they get flipped to be rented to people who have a little bit more income or significantly more income. But do the services improve? Just generally, is like an SRO a nice place once the area around it's been gentrified?
SROs can be, just like any other building, a nice place depending on what happens around the area. But what happens inside the building might not change depending on what's happening outside the building, right? The term nice, you know, the SRO might look nicer, but it looks nicer because the landlord wants to bring in people to pay higher rent, right? The landlords could easily make the insides of SRO hotels look nice today for current populations, right? They have the money to do so.
That really your experience generally, that they have the rental income to be able to make these changes and
the
fix
owners?
It? Yeah.
The SRO owners in my experience, if they have the money to make it look better so new tenants can come in to pay more, then they have the money to do it for the current populations, right? That's my opinion. Granted, it could be seen as an investment, but I haven't heard of a SRO owner struggling. This is a building owner in San Francisco. If they're struggling, they can sell the building for millions of dollars, right? And they can have someone else come in there and maintain
even
it
an
as
SRO?
An SRO. They can also master lease it to the city.
That's true.
They can also turn it over to a nonprofit who will definitely make it better.
Yeah. I'm just curious because we don't often see the insides of SROs. I mean, certainly the average person walking down the street doesn't often see the inside of an SRO. And it's, you know, the few times that I have.
It could be jarring.
It can be jarring, yeah.
Indeed. I've been inside plenty of SROs, both in the Tenderloin and in the Mission. And yeah, no, it's understandable, but I honestly believe the capital is there for the building owners to make improvements for current residents. And I honestly don't think that they will unless there is an economic incentive for them. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll do it because they want to improve the conditions of their building. Because it's, you know, there are still infestation problems. There are still, you know, like plumbing issues that they could easily fix. But they don't.
I want to leave the SRO topic just before we run out of time and talk about Plaza 16 and the 1979 Mission Project, because
the monster in the Mission,
as it's more commonly known, because I get the sense that we're heading for another sort of showdown, for lack of a better term. A couple years ago, there was a meeting in which the developers pitched sort of the community benefits of the project, and a lot of the neighborhood came out, and basically the meeting fell apart. It was pretty much shouted down. And you
taken
have
taken over organizing.
And you have asked the planning commission, the planning department, to have the hearing for that building, which it will inevitably require, but hasn't been set yet, in the Mission District.
Yep.
Why? And have you heard back?
So, yeah. So about a month ago, you know, Plaza 16 Coalition had made the ask of the planning commission to hold the hearing in the neighborhood. We felt that, irregardless of how the vote's going to go, we want to have a true neighborhood community-based process here. And, you know, if the proposed project right now would definitely remake that area. And 16th Street BART station is a major hub for the neighborhood, right? And so if a major project is going to come into the Mission onto 16th Street Plaza, then they should have hearings in the neighborhood in which it seeks to affect, right? You can't just remake that area without coming here and hearing from the residents. City Hall is oftentimes not the most welcoming space for people. You know, you have to go through the security. There are these lines. The planning commission chambers don't even hold a lot of people, right? They would have to be in another, you know, it's hard to ask community members who are already working perhaps multiple jobs, who have families, who will be affected by this and who want to provide input on this, whether it's in the affirmative or the negative. It's hard for them to go to City Hall and wait 5 hours to give 2 minutes of public comment.
Yep.
And so, you know, we think that for the benefit of public input, for the benefit of civic engagement, that they should bring the hearing here. What, you know, whether, and again, it doesn't matter whether or not the project has the votes or it doesn't, right? We don't know what the votes are. We don't know if we're going to win or lose, but we do want to make sure that the commission hears from as many community members as possible. And the best way to do that is to bring the hearing to the neighborhood, right? We want the commissioners to come here, and we want to welcome them to the Mission, first of all, right? But then it's also, we want them to hear about, you know, what people feel. I mean, we want the city to take a step towards expanding the capabilities of community engagement. And we feel as this is a way that they can do so in a very innovative, forward-thinking way, right? A big project's coming to your neighborhood. We're going to come to you to hear from you about it. And we'll make the decision here in the neighborhood about the neighborhood.
And have you heard back?
The deadline's actually today.
So, oh my goodness.
It is. So
I wasn't expecting that. Yeah. All right. And
so we have not yet heard any official response, and we will be going, Plaza 16 Coalition will be going to the Planning Commission today, expecting a response. If we don't, we will have a statement ready. And if we do, we will have a statement ready.
Okay. Well, we will look out for that. Chidak, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back 2 weeks from today with news and narratives from the neighborhood. If you'd like to get in touch, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. We're also on Twitter, where we're at MLNow. Up next, back to the music. Keep it here on BFF.FM, and thanks for listening.